Okay, so if you will, got your scriptures handy, turn with me to the book of Bamidbar in the wilderness, or also known as Numbers in the English, chapter 16. And we're going to follow up a, I guess you'd have to say, a pretty, downhill slide, kind of a Torah portion last week, with one that may even top that when it comes to things that are almost anyway, inexplicable. This one is called Korach, and sometimes in English people say Korah, but it's actually, it ends in a chet. And chapter 16 begins like this. Now, it says, Korach, son of Ishar, son of Kohath, son of Levi, of with also fellows named Dathan and Abiram, sons of Eliav and On, son of Peleth, and sons of Reuben in turn, they all took some men, and they rose up in the face of Moshe with certain of the B'nai Israel, 250 men. These guys were princes of the congregation, and they were the elect of the assembly, men of renown. This was quite the rebellion. Of course, this portion, Korah, is also called the rebellion of Korah, Korah's rebellion. They assembled themselves against Moshe and against Aaron. And they said the following, you guys take too much upon you. Hey, look, isn't all of the congregation holy, set apart, every one of them, and Yahuwah is among them? So therefore, why do you lift yourselves up above the assembly of Yahuwah? Moshe heard all of this. He fell on his face. He spoke to Korah and the assembled company, and he said, look, in the morning Yahuwah will show you. You want to see? Who are his? Who it is that is set apart, and will cause him to come near unto him. Even whom he may choose will he cause to come near unto him. Now let's pause for a second and kind of set the stage here. Because when we get to this portion, people always want to ask the question, wait a minute. This is just, shortly after we saw the incident with the spies, the 10-2 vote, and essentially all of the adults within the congregation were told, this is it, I've had it, basically. You guys are not going to live to enter the land. Anybody above the age of 20, their carcasses will fall in the wilderness. And again, it was kind of a disappointing, to put it mildly, story. So I guess you'd have to say this. Wouldn't you think they would have learned the lesson? Didn't they get it? They're not done yet. So now we've got Korah and these other men literally rising up in the face of Moshe and Aaron and rebelling. What is also interesting, the sages point this out, is that there are a number of elements of the things that Korah says and the way they phrase things and the way all this pans out that really, they indicate kind of an attitude in the camp. Now, some of it I'll pass along because I'm sure if you haven't heard it, it's probably good food for thought. I don't necessarily accept everything that the Midrash says. That's almost always true because generally the Midrashes don't always even agree with one another. So that shouldn't surprise us too much. But certainly what we're seeing here is a little different kind of whining. And I've seen at least one set of studies that say, look, if you go back through Scripture and you notice that when the people of Israel whine, when they murmur among themselves, they tend, most of the time, to personify it. In other words, they pick specifically on Moshe and Aaron rather than on Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh himself. And that looks like what we're seeing here, too. It is, in fact, Korah who rises up in the face of Moshe, it says. And he against Moshe and Aaron, says, you take too much upon yourself. So that part at least is consistent. What is perhaps a little bit different is the approach here. Because oftentimes it seems that the people kind of regard Moses in particular, but also Moses and Aaron, as demigods, as replacements, if you will, for Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Now, no question, he speaks, Moses speaks on behalf of Yod-Heh-Vav. Hey, almost all of these portions begin, and it says, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to whoever it is, right? And tell them something. Tell them these words in red. But in this case, what's interesting is the way Korah approaches this situation. He is, in fact, in reverse of the normal idea of elevating Moshe and Aaron. Now he's going to pick on Moshe and Aaron specifically and appeal as if, in fact, it is he who is just as able to speak to Yah. And that maybe sounds a little bit like how it is that Miriam and Aaron got in trouble not too long ago as well. What seems to be kind of the consistent theme here, though, is this idea of Israel in denial. And I do think that this particular psychology plays out. Consider this. We have just seen a whole bunch of people in Israel be told, all right, you thought you were headed into the land. It's not all that far away. If you guys had just mind your P's and Q's, you could have walked into the land in fairly short order. But no. Essentially, you would not believe Yah. You didn't trust in him. You went with the democratic voting process instead, and it cost you. And now you're never going to see the land. You're, in fact, going to die here. So there is no doubt an element of, right, the seven stages of dealing with grief, anger and denial and all of that. So we're seeing a lot of people here somewhere between the stages of anger and denial. First denial part, and now anger. And who is it that they're going to take their anger out on? Well, Moshe and Aaron. Nothing unusual there. Back to the theme, to the story. Moses says, hey, guys, look, here's what you're going to do. You go get your censers, Korah, all his company, put some fire in them, put incense on them before Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh tomorrow morning. And it will be the following. The man to whom Yahuwah chooses, that is the one that shall be holy. You, you sons of Korach, you are the ones who take too much upon you, you sons of Levi. Moses then further said to Korah, listen to me. Hear now, you sons of Levi. Is it a small thing to you? Now, as I go through this, I'm going to read this pretty much in the English translation about as close to word for word as I generally do. And what I want to have you focus on and resonate with you here is the terminology, the way that Moshe phrases things, and then the way that Korah, kind of in your face, phrases his rebuttal. It's sarcasm. Is it but a small thing to you, he says, that the Elohim of Israel has separated you, called you out from the congregation of Israel, to bring you near to himself, to do the service of the Mishkan, the tabernacle of Yahuwah, to stand before the congregation, to minister unto them. And he's brought you near, and all your brethren, the sons of Levi, with you. What, are you going to seek the priesthood too now? Therefore, says Moshe, you and all your company that are gathered together against who? Against Yahuwah. And as to Aaron, who is he? What is he? He's the high priest, remember? What is he that you murmur against him? So Moshe sends to Dathan and Abiram, sons of Eliab, and they responded, no, we're not going to come up. And they said the following, is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in this wilderness? But now you need to make yourself a prince over us too. So Moshe asks an important question. Is it a small thing to you that you've been called out, that you've got this wonderful task that you've been appointed to? Well, is it a small thing, huh, that you brought us? No. How ironic, right? Out of a land flowing with milk and honey. This is a place where they were slaves, folks. And now they refer to it in the same terminology that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh used to refer to his land that he was going to bring them into. To kill us in this wilderness. Geez, not the first time we've heard that. And now you're going to make yourself a prince over us. Moreover, you haven't brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. You're going to put the eyes of these men out? Nope, we ain't coming up. Now, you know, by the way, why it is that verse 14 is perhaps a little bit poignant. They're not going to go into the land flowing with milk and honey. And if they were listening, they know why. Moshe was pretty angry. He said to Yahuwah, "Do not respect their offering. Look, I haven't taken so much as one ass from them, nor have I hurt one of them." So Moshe said to Korah, "You, all of your congregation, before Yahuwah, be there tomorrow, along with Aaron, in the morning. And yeah, get your fire pan, every man, put incense upon him, bring him before Yahuwah, 250 fire pans, you also, and Aaron too." Everybody's going to bring their fire pan. So they did as directed. Each man took his fire pan, they put fire in them, laid incense, stood at the door of the tent of meeting with Moshe and Aaron. And here, folks, is where the plot, as they say, thickens. Korah assembled all the congregation, Kol Edah, against them in the door of the tent of the meeting. And at this point, the Shekinah, the glory of Yahuwah, appears. And Yahuwah spoke, it says, interestingly, to Moses and Aaron. Makes you wonder whether the rest of them could hear or not. But he is specifically speaking to Moshe and Aaron. And he says, "Separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment." This is serious. Moshe and Aaron, it says, they fell upon their faces. They said, "O Elohim, Elohim of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin? And will you be wroth with the whole congregation?" The implication here is that Korah is going to be punished, but all of these others too. Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said the following, "Speak to the congregation, say, get up! Get out from around the dwelling of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram." And interestingly enough, the dwelling there, that's the way this English Bible translates it. The word there really is Mishkan. From their Mishkan, their tent. Tabernacle. Get away. Separate yourselves. Moshe went up to Dathan and Abiram. The elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke to the whole congregation. And he said the following, "Depart, I pray you, get away from the tents of these wicked men. Don't touch anything of theirs, lest you be swept away with them in all of their sins." Now, as I read this, well, it's interesting. I've thought about this before, but I think this year, for some reason, it particularly resonates with me, and I want to spend a minute on this before we get to the climax of the story. If you've heard the story, you know what's fixing to happen. You know it is not going to go well for this rebellion here, in particular for Korah and his house. So Moshe gives a final warning. He says, "Get away, depart." Hey, can I say it this way? "Come out of here, you folks, from the tents of these wicked men. Do not even touch any of their stuff." Now, let me think about other verses in Scripture that kind of immediately come to mind. "Touch not the unclean thing. Separate yourself. Come out of her, my people, lest you partake of her sins and the plagues that are fixing to follow right here before your very eyes." The reason why I think that's interesting and why I'm going to emphasize it this year in particular is because, remember, this is a camp that was contained within Mitzrayim, a pagan land. What did Yah do? He took the slaves, the people of Israel, the mixed multitude, out of bondage by a mighty hand, brought them through the Sea of Reeds, parted the sea, showed them all these miracles, the plagues, brought them into the wilderness, and now they are their own camp. And indeed, most of the things that we've seen in Torah that are given to them now and as they go into the land have to do one way or the other with being set apart. "Be ye holy, because I am holy." Has to do with cleaning up the camp. Everything from simple, rudimentary things like, where do you put the potties? How do you deal with the human excrement? How do you deal with it on a physical and on an emotional and on a spiritual level? What does all this mean to be holy, set apart, because I am set apart? The camp, the whole camp is supposed to be clean, to be set apart, to be holy. And here we got a real problem in the camp with Korah. So what is the solution? It's literally a camp within a camp. And what Moshe is telling them, I find this fascinating, and the parallels here I hope aren't lost on folks. Come out of that camp within a camp. Separate yourself from that. Even within this clean camp of the B'nai Israel, when you see this kind of wickedness, get away from it. Don't touch their stuff. Touch not the unclean thing. So I think the reason why this is so interesting to me, and, you know, as we talk about the news tonight, some of these things will really, I think, fall into place, is because here we are in a land that is not the promised land. Well, that is kind of like where they were. But for crying out loud, we're in a camp that's about as pagan and unclean and literally filthy to the core in so many ways as it could possibly be. So if nothing else, if we look at this story and say, well, a lot of things about this story are very, very different from where we find ourselves today. Like everything in Torah, it has some very important lessons for us. But nevertheless, we don't have a leader like Moshe. A lot of the things that would seem to be going on here are, if nothing else, at opposite extremes of the pendulum swing from where we are. But this, at least, we can seize on. It's a camp within a camp. Come out of the camp within a camp. Separate yourselves. Don't touch their stuff. So, people got up from the dwelling of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram on every side. Dathan and Abiram came out. They stood at the door of their tents with their wives, their sons, and their little ones. And Moshe said the following, here you are gonna know. Here is how you shall know that Yahuwah has sent me to do all these works, and that I have not, repeat not, done them of my own heart. Now, the English version I'm looking at says my own mind, but it really is my levi, me levi, right? Lev, heart, levi, my heart. So no, I haven't done these things out of my own heart. If these men in fact die the kind of regular old natural death of all men, and they be visited after the visitation of all men, in other words, if things kind of go as they have been going, well, then Yahuwah has not sent me. But on the other hand, if a whole new thing happens, if Yahuwah does a whole new thing, and the ground opens up her mouth, and Rashi makes a cogent point here, the only time, or the first time particularly, we see the earth opening up her mouth, it was what? It was to swallow Abel's blood. This is a serious transgression, and that was a new thing in its time. This, which is fixing to happen, is a new thing too. So if this new thing happens, ground opens up her mouth and swallows them up with everything that appertains to them, and they all go down alive into the pit, then you shall know and understand that these men have, he is not going to mince words here, have despised, provoked, no, not me, but Yahuwah. So it came to pass, as he made an end of speaking those words, the ground literally did in fact cleave asunder that was under them. The earth opened up her mouth and swallowed them up, their households, and all the men that appertained unto Korah, and all of their goods. So they and everything associated with them went down alive into the pit. Earth closed over them, and they departed. They perished from among the assembly. All Israel, Kol Israel, that were round about fled, for they said, uh-oh, we don't want to be swallowed up too. So fire came forth from Yahuwah at that point, and did what? It devoured the other 250 men that had offered incense. When all is said and done, you look at this chapter and you say, okay, I think the point has been made. It's been made about as clearly as it can be made. The 250 men that were with Korah were literally devoured by fire. Yahuwah then spoke to Moshe, and he said, listen, speak unto Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest. Tell him to take up those fire pans out of the burning and scatter that fire over yonder. Those fire pans have become set apart. Even the fire pans of these men who sinned at the cost of their very lives. Let those things be beaten into plates. for a covering for the altar, because they have become set apart holy. They were offered before Yahuwah, and this, in turn, will be a sign, a memorial to the children of Israel. So Eleazar the priest took the brazen fire pans, which they that were burnt up had offered, and they beat them out into a covering for the altar to be a memorial for the children of Israel, so that it would be understood that no common man, not of the seed of Aaron, would draw near to burn incense before Yahuwah, so that he doesn't suffer the same fate as Korah and his company. And Yahuwah spoke to him by the hand of Moshe. Okay, at this point, you almost got to pause and say, wow, that ought to be a lesson to anybody. Right? And you can almost hear the voice of the announcer during the commercial saying, but wait, there's more! You're kidding me, right? You mean the people didn't still get the message? No, by tomorrow morning, it says, all coal of the congregation, coal edat, the whole stinking, for crying out loud. They were murmuring again against Moshe and against Aaron, saying, you have killed the people of Yahuwah. You're kidding me. They're once again doing the same thing. I mean, talk about human nature and how the same mistakes get made over and over again. Yeah, you, Moshe and Aaron, you have killed the people of Yahuwah. Weren't you watching? Didn't you get it? Now, I cannot argue with the standard midrash on this point, and that is, wait a minute, folks. We're talking about the standard human reaction here of denial. Personification. You can't believe what you've seen with your own eyes, blame somebody. Guess who? So it came to pass, when the congregation was assembled against Moshe and against Aaron, they looked towards the tent of meeting. Behold, there's that cloud again. Wonder what's going to happen now. And the glory of Yahuwah appeared. Moshe and Aaron came to the tent, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said the following. Lift yourself up. Get out from among this congregation so that I may consume them in a moment. What is the response of these men who probably had every reason to say, you know what, we've had it too. I think we're going to just walk over the hill there. Father, you do as you like with them. Nope. I got to give it, a round of applause. Kudos. This man, Moshe, in this respect, no question, folks. He is he is more full of love than I would have probably been in the similar situation at this point. He fell on his face along with Aaron. Moshe said to Aaron, get your fire pan and hurry, my bro. Put fire in it from off the altar, lay incense on it, and carry it quickly. Run, man, out into the congregation. Make atonement for them, for the wrath has gone out from Yahuwah. The plague has begun. Aaron took off as Moshe spoke, and he didn't run. He didn't walk, he ran, right? Remember the old song, walk, don't run? He did the opposite. He ran out into the assembly. Behold, the plague was begun among the people. He put on the incense. He made atonement for the people, and they were dropping like flies. I'm trying to read this in such a way that you get the impression of what the situation was here. Aaron literally ran into the masses. He stood between the dead and the living and stayed the plague. The term that I wrote in my margin is literally, in the English, we would say cauterized. He cauterized the mass death that was moving through this crowd I'm thinking of the phrase Patton used in his famous speech. You know what threw a goose. You ready for this? They that died by the plague were 14,700. Besides those that had already died concerning the matter of Korah. 14,700 people. And the time it took Aaron to get up, put some fire in his pan, and run into the crowd. This is serious stuff. Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, speak unto the children of Israel. Take of them rods, one for each of his father's house, for all the princes, according to their father's houses, 12 of them, in other words, one for each of the 12 sons of Israel. Write each man's name upon his rod. And make sure you put Aaron's name upon the rod for Levi, for there will be one rod for the head of each of these fathers' houses. Lay them up in the tent of meeting before the testimony where I meet with you. And it'll come to pass that the man whom I choose, he is still making a real clear point here, isn't he? The man that I choose, that rod shall bud. And I will make to cease from me the whining, the you-know-whatting, and the moaning, the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against you. Moshe spoke to the children of Israel. Princes gave him their rods, their staves, for each prince one of them, according to their father's houses, yep, 12 in total, including Aaron's among them. Moshe did as he was told, laid up the rods before Yahuwah in the tent of meeting, and it came to pass in the morning. They went on down there, and hey, check it out, guys. Guess whose rod had budded? Yeah, it was Aaron's. Later on in Scripture, this is referred to as Aaron's rod that budded. It put forth not only buds, but also blossoms, and even had ripe almonds on it. Could you call that a minor miracle, a sign? Moshe brought the rods out from before Yahuwah to the children of Israel, said, check this out, guys. See what you think of this. They looked. Every man took his own rod. Yahuwah said to Moshe, put back the rod of Aaron before the testimony to be kept there, kind of as a reminder, a token against the rebellious children, that there may be made an end of their murmurings. Now, before it was against Moshe, right? Aaron. This time he says against me, so that they die not. Moses did as he was commanded, so he did. And I like the way Scripture puts that. I frequently will point this out. You would think this is not a redundancy. The reason why it's in here, I will contend, is because it's important. As Moshe was commanded, yep, so he did. You want to see the essence of the Hebraic mindset. That's it. As commanded, so did he. The children of Israel spoke to Moshe, said, we are undone. We perish. We are all undone. Everyone that comes near to the tabernacle of Yahuwah is to die. Shall we wholly perish? Yahuwah then says to Aaron this time, you and your sons and your father's house with you will bear the iniquity of the sanctuary. You and your sons with you shall bear the iniquity of your priesthood. Your brethren, too, tribe of Levi, tribe of your father, bring all of these folks near with you that they may be joined unto me and minister. You and your sons with you before the tent of the testimony. They are the ones who are going to keep my charge, the charge of all of the Mishkan, the tent, the Ohel. Only they shall not come near unto the holy furniture and the altar so that they die not, neither they nor you. They will be joined unto you and keep the charge of the tent of meeting. And you will keep charge of the set-apart things, the holy things, and the altar, so that there is no more wrath upon the children of Israel. Behold, I have taken your brothers, the Levites, from among the children of Israel, to do the service of the tent of meeting. You and your sons with you will keep your priesthood, and everything that pertains to the altar, all those things within the veil you shall serve. I will give you, and I have given you, the priesthood as a service of gift. Any common man that comes in here, not so good. He shall be put to death. Yahuwah went on to speak to Moshe, saying further, behold, I have given charge of you to my heave offerings, all of the hallowed things of the B'nai Israel. I have given them for a consecrated portion. This is to be you and your sons forever. It's a due to you forever. This shall be yours of the most holy things reserved from the fire. Everything of theirs, the meal offerings, the sin offerings, the guilt offerings, the things that they render to me, they'll be most set apart for you and for your sons. And you will eat of this in the set apart place. Every male of your house may eat of it. It'll be set apart unto you. This is a gift, the heave offering, the wave offerings of the children of Israel. I have given them to you and your sons and your daughters as a due forever. Everyone that is clean within your house may eat all of this. All the best of the oil, the best of the wine, the corn, the first part of those things which are given unto Yahuwah, to you. In other words, to the priesthood, you sons of Aaron. and your descendants. Those are the ones to whom I've given these things. The first fruits of all in the land that they bring unto Yahuwah, all of that is to be yours, and anyone that's clean may eat of that too. Everything devoted, set apart in Israel will be yours. Everything that opens the womb, all flesh that's offered to Yahuwah, man and beast, shall be yours. Remember, it's his, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. He, in turn, is bequeathing it as an agent to Aaron as his agent, if you will. Firstborn of man, though, you're to redeem. The firstling of the unclean beasts you shall redeem. And the redemption money from a month old, you shall redeem them, is to be the following. 5 shekels of silver. And the firstling of an ox or a sheep or the firstling of a goat, you don't redeem. These are clean animals. They are set apart. Dash their blood against the altar. Make their fat smoke for an offering made by fire, a sweet savor to Yahuwah. And the flesh, though, of those shall be yours. All the heave offerings I've given you, your sons and your daughters. And he says, you will have no inheritance in the land further. Remember, all the other tribes are going to get an inheritance of the land. But you're not to have any portion among them. I, says Yahuwah, I am your portion and your inheritance among the children of Israel. The children of Levi, behold, I have given all of the tithe, that tenth part, in Israel for their inheritance, in return for the service which they serve to the testimony and to the tabernacle, the Mishkan. And henceforth the children of Israel will not come nigh that tent, lest they bear sin and die. Levites alone will do this thing. This, he says, will be a statute forever throughout your generations, and among the children of Israel they shall have no inheritance. And some of you may remember this. It's interesting, but probably one of the most, and at least as far as I can remember, one of the first major gene markers that was discovered and was widely discussed in the scientific press was that there really is a genetic marker that people carry. A lot of folks who bear the name of Cohen, for example, which of course is the name for priest, or Levi, or Levite, or Levin, or Levine, lots of modern day names, will be found to carry this genetic marker that marks them as a son of Levi. Anyway, the tithe of the children of Israel, which they set apart as a gift, I have given to the Levites for an inheritance. And guess what? It's still possible to determine who they are. Among the children of Israel, they will have no other inheritance. So, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe after all this, and he said the following. You are to speak unto the Levites and say to them, when you take of the children of Israel the tithe that I have given you, for your inheritance, you shall set apart of that as a gift to Yahuwah, a tithe out of a tithe. So they get 10% that's his. Of that, they take a tenth of what they've got, and they give it as a tithe, which is to be set apart as though it were the corn of the threshing floor and the fullness of the winepress, set apart a gift unto Yahuwah of your own tithes, the things that I've given you, and give that as a gift set apart to Aaron the priest. Of all that's given you, set apart that part which is due to Yahuwah, the best of the best of the hallowed part. Therefore, you will say unto them, when you set apart the best from it, and it shall be counted unto the Levites as the increase of the threshing floor or of the winepress, and you may eat it in every place, you and your households, for that too is your reward in return for your service of the tent of meeting. Interesting, but still important. Even of the tithe, a tithe is set apart, and of course that too they can eat of. You shall bear no sin by reason of it, seeing that you have set it apart from the best thereof. And you shall not profane the set apart things of the children of Israel, so that you too die not. So we end the story of rebellion, and a story that basically kind of boils down to, gee, you'd think by now they would have figured it out, with, in a lot of respects, what sounds like a reprise, a repeat of some of the things that we know from before about the Levites. And yet, I guess, the thing that probably we need to take heed of in all of this is that it is the due of the Levites to take things that are set apart to Yah and to eat of them, as the case may be, and to have that as their inheritance. But with that comes an obligation as well. These things are not to be separated. To whom much is given, much is expected. I think that's probably the simple way to summarize it. I want to make one other observation as we wrap it up this evening, and this I give credit to Rabbi David Foreman on. It's not something that in the past I haven't looked up myself, because one of the things that you always, at least when it comes to Hebrew names, and particularly when they're very important Hebrew names, you want to take a look and see what they mean. And if you go look up the Kuf Resh Chet, the root for Korah or Korach. I remember looking this up in years past and thinking, well, what do you make of that? The word literally kind of sort of means bald spot. So here's a guy who is, his name has become, at least in biblical circles, synonymous with rebellion. And yet, what is the meaning of the name? And I'll admit, I've scratched my head, but the explanation that I heard David Foreman give, I think, is a pretty good one, particularly this year. It seems to resonate more. So the idea is the following. The bald spot was created by an ancient Amorite mourning practice. So literally, here's a guy whose name implies an ancient Amorite mourning practice. Well, this is essentially a pagan thing. Torah says don't do it. In, I believe it's Deuteronomy chapter 14. Don't do it. It's forbidden. What the heck has that got to do with this story? Don't tear out your hair, make little bald spots, little korachs, for grief. Well, now if you step back and think about it, I guess maybe it should have been obvious, because that seems to be the implication of the whole story. The people here are doing what? They are grieving. They have just finished being told, you fools, you. You wouldn't listen. Now your carcasses are going to die in the wilderness. Doesn't it make sense that there'd be a little bit of grieving going on? But what's the problem? They are not doing it in the right way. Matter of fact, if you go to Deuteronomy 14, you'll find that word, Korach, is used. They are not grieving in the right way. Doesn't that really kind of summarize this whole portion? You're upset. I know this. You are now being punished, guys. There's a right way and a wrong way to grieve. Grieving in the pagan way is not going to sit well with your father. Tear out your hair, make little bald spots in your heads. They're in denial. So I guess if you step back and think about it, and think about pagan ways of grieving, forbidden ways of grieving, is there a better name for the cause and the result than Korach, the rebellion? The lessons here, I guess, are just so obvious, particularly when you really see how amazing it is that the meaning of the words really does fit, even if, for some of us, we can read the story for years and years and not quite have it click, but it does this year. And I guess we'll talk about some of this when we talk about the news in a few minutes. But I look out and I think, to some extent, we're in a different place. We're grieving for a different reason. But we look at the literal death throes of a nation that has forgotten Yah, and that is ripping out its hair for all the wrong reasons, and literally rubbing people's noses in just how far gone one law for you and the stranger that dwells among you has become. So there are more lessons in here, if we step back and think about it, than probably we might like to admit.